If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Leslie Wood is a UK-based mixed media artist whose work explores the origins of everyday textiles. Her figurative works use reclaimed fabrics and other ephemera to explore the history of the materials while projecting forwards and creating new narratives. This is the first part of our needle exchange, and Leslie and I talk about how she came to fine stitching, having had a background in fine art and painting, how she transitioned into textile art, how her years of being a teacher informed her creative practice. We talk about mind mapping. We talk about a fantastic project that she did using embroidered slides and how the Embroiderers Guild were quite instrumental in unlocking her creativity. Leslie's work is really interesting. I really enjoy her use of negative space, which is something that we'll cover in the second part of our needle exchange. But it's clear that she's got a passion and she's come out hitting strongly. She's already won several awards for her work and is determined to get a piece into the Royal Academy summer show as well. So I think you'll enjoy this chat. Leslie's a lovely person. She's very well informed. She's very considered and very wise. And I enjoy talking to her. Thanks, as always, for listening to Needle Exchange. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. If this artwork resonates with you, it'd be great if you can share it with another person so that they can discover what I'm going on about. And if you have any ideas of how I can do things differently or any artist recommendations, do feel free to email hello@needleexchange, that's needle without an E, .exchange, and let me know what you think. I love getting your feedback. It's really touching. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the show. See you next time. You studied fine art at Loughborough and started out as a painter.
Yeah, yeah. The reason I ended up doing fine art painting was really because I'd gone to art college to do my foundation course, pre-diploma or whatever it was called in those days, in Northampton. And in those days, they only... Well, you did a bit of everything to decide on what you wanted to do your degree in. And they didn't have textiles. You did printmaking, sculpture, graphics, fine art painting. So it was quite limited. So I didn't realise there was a course to do with textiles until I got to Loughborough. And then I could see this course going on and thought, oh, that looks good. But I was sort of into painting then, so I continued with the painting.
And the painting that you were doing then, is that similar to the kind of stuff you're doing now? Is it of a similar sort of theme, figurative, with landscape?
It was an awkward time, because this is going back to the 70s, and the art college did a lot of minimal stuff, and it wasn't really my thing. Although the good thing about it was they did a lot of life drawings, so my work was kind of figurative, semi-figurative. And I remember doing a few figures with uniforms on and things. So I was obviously interested in clothing. And at one point I was dipping fabric into plaster. So there was obviously tactile interest in clothing out of fabric.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that remains to this day?
Yes.
So a lot of your work, actually, would you just describe your work? Describe your work for me, and then I can try and sound intelligent off the back of that somehow.
Right. It's usually got a sort of narrative element to it. And that is because my influence or my inspiration often comes from words or actual objects. And the objects being fabric and usually table linen, vintage table linen. And it sort of starts off an imaginative sort of story within, and then I work on that. So the bird, I've done birds and I've done figures, and they're usually using reclaimed fabric and hand stitch. I don't really use the machine. And I'll talk classes, mixed media textiles rather than just embroidery, because I use different elements and I will put in different materials and ephemera, all sorts of things. To tell a story, I suppose. But I don't actually, the story isn't that obvious. Hopefully it's not that obvious, because I'd like people to look at the work and make up their own ideas or stories or narrative from that.
You set a scene, perhaps, for people to...
Yeah. But I think the fabric often tells a story, or it does to me, and therefore I try to visualise that, I suppose. Yeah.
You talk about the biography of fabric, don't you?
Yeah.
Which I think is really nice.
No. I started off, because I was a painter, and the only reason I started using stitch was because of my mum. She did a bit of knitting, wasn't very good. I used to go to school with very sloppy jumpers, and at the time it was skinny ripped jumpers and things, and I would have loved to have had this shop bought jumper, but no, she knitted these jumpers. She was good at things like shawls, baby shawls and things like that, but actual jumpers, not so good, because she used to enjoy knitting. So she would knit on an evening, my dad would sit next to her watching the telly, and then when he got his hearing aid, he got really irritated by this click, click, click of the needles.
Right.
So he and she decided to try cross stitch.
Okay.
Because it was quieter.
Oh, nice. Very kind. She didn't tell him to leave the room or anything.
She just changed. But she enjoyed the cross stitch. And then when she did kits, and then when she passed away, there was all these threads. And I was told, do you want these? And I said, oh, I think I could make something of them. So that and the fact that I was not a table linen and things had passed on to me from grandmothers, etc. And I thought I could probably do something with it. So I started off doing things very crudely, because I've never embroidered anything before.
Right.
And I was stitching with 6 strands of embroidery thread, because I didn't realise you could slip them and things like that. So I didn't realise you needed to have tension on there to stop it going all wobbly. So I decided after a while to join the Embroiderers Guild. And it's from there, really, that I learned about embroidery. I mean, I'm a super group, so, yeah.
I was a member of the Embroiderers Guild, and I think the thing is that there's such a breadth of, like, for me, it was like I was finding out stuff that I wouldn't have sought to have learned, which I thought was quite important.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first workshop that I went to was Julia Tristan. I don't know if you know her.
I've heard of her.
Yeah, she used to live in the Northeast, and now she's over in Denmark, I think, something like that, making things out of old bras and stuff of that sort. So, yeah. So that was the first. So I thought, oh, this is not the embroidery that I had imagined. And then I went to a Mandy Cthulhu workshop. The thing was, the Embroidery Guild was very good in opening up these avenues of finding out about the subject, seeing, as you say, different types of textiles, giving you an opportunity to exhibit as well, because the local group exhibit. So that wouldn't have happened with my painting, really. Because, as you know from my biography, I was a teacher, full-time teacher, art teacher. Mm. I did a bit of special needs teaching as well. Hats off to anybody that can teach and keep their creative practice going, because I just was exhausted from it. It just drained me. I did a bit of sketchbook work. I went to a regular life class, drawing, painting class. So that kept my hand in. But all your sort of energies went into installing that sort of creative urge in the kids. So you didn't have time. And then as time went on, all the paperwork and the lack of time and the way that the arts were perceived in schools just drove you insane. So, yeah, it left little time for my own practice. So when I managed to retire, that was my focus. I was going to really go to town on doing some artwork, and it's just gone from there. Because I've only been stitching since 2016.
Right.
So okay. not a great deal of time.
You've come a long way.
But all the other things that you do in arts, teaching art, because I used to do a bit of ceramics, a bit of textiles, a bit of paint, everything really, because you want to keep kids their interest. So do an awful lot of different disciplines, which is exciting, don't get me wrong. I enjoy teaching the kids. We quite miss them in a way. Mm. And there was lots of things I would get a spark of, oh, that's a great idea from the kids. And they, I would really like to run with that myself, but they didn't have the time. So, yeah.
I think Sally Wilson said the same thing when I interviewed her, because she spent a long time as an art teacher. And I think you just make this mental log of going, oh, you can melt that thing and it does that thing. I'll bear that in mind for a future juncture. Yeah. But as you say, you're so busy. And I guess as well, you have to be really enthusiastic for the kids, isn't it? Your job is as much to inspire as it is to teach. And so that just is giving of yourself, isn't it? There's not a lot left at the end of the day.
Yeah. So anybody that does, I don't know, a number of people that can do that. There's a Linda Harvey in York. Okay. And she teaches, I'm not sure if it's full-time or part-time, produces masses of great stuff. So I just, in awe.
It's always the way, isn't it? And she's a nice person. Yeah. You're like, no, that's not fair. Why can't she be mean? Because I was interested. One of the things I was wondering was about, like, when you start working with fabric, whether you have an idea in mind or whether you pick up a piece of fabric and then you just ponder on it and let the fabric almost call the early shots.
It can work either way. I can get a piece of fabric and think, oh, that's interesting. Maybe that would be very good for a certain project I'm doing. But I would say more often than not, I start with an idea that's come from maybe a word, a poem, something I've read, or an image that I've seen and thought, I would like to do that. Then I will search around for fabrics and find a base one that will fit. I mean, I've got some ideas in my head or in sketchbooks that I think, well, if I see a piece of fabric that would match that, I'll go with it. I'm doing a project at the moment which supposed to have been inspired by Usher College, which is in Durham, that is full of Pugin tiles and things. So I'm now on the lookout for sort of Pugin style fabrics that have swirls and things on them.
If there's any listeners listening with some Pugin style fabrics,
oh no,
send them to Leslie. Right, yeah. So there's a sort of dialogue there, because it's interesting. Again, I think Kaz Holmes was another one. She's quite a found objects kind of person. And I think there's a bit of a step into the unknown sometimes with those things, whereas it feels like yours is a little bit more considered, almost like you're being a bit of archaeology with a fabric or something.
Yeah, I mean, early on I did a series of work based on the magpie traditional thing, one for sorrow, two for joy.
Yeah.
I did the first one and thought, oh, I like this. Maybe I could do that. So it's kind of illustration, really. But I then started looking around for different table mats and things that would be appropriate, dyeing them, and then working out the composition of every one of them so that each had that number of magpies on and that it worked as a composition. And so, yeah, that's from the idea to the fabric. But then I'll have some fabric that will have a stain on it mm-hmm. or a darn on it, and then I'll work around that. So, yeah, I did some work with sea pottery. I've done things with sea pottery. And again, that's like, ooh, wonder where that came from. Yeah, it's just, I'm just interested in the history, I suppose.
And then in also making the history, you know, just.
Yes,
the,
yeah. Retelling it, that's really what I'm about, retelling a story that might not be the real one, but yeah.
There's an artist called Matthew Cox, I don't know if you know of him, who stitches on x-rays. And what he tends to do is kind of like build the character that you're seeing the x-ray of, which I thought was a real smart move.
Yeah, that's yeah, I know what you mean. But how he doesn't crack, I mean, there must be, I don't know how he sews through them. It might be
very
quite tough, I would imagine. Yes.
There's a few random things. I just want to be a bit random, but one of my favorite pieces of your work is Slideshow with the 35mm slides with the tiny embroideries of the movie stars. Yes. And oh my goodness, can you talk to me about that, please?
Well, the good thing about the embroidery guild is they give you these challenges, and this was a local one, a northeast one, and it was twin. It had to be done on a 2-inch square.
Right, okay.
Right. I thought it was a bit twee. I thought, don't think I'll do this. And then I think I was looking through some junk that I've got and come across these 35mm slides and thought, hang on, that's 2 inches. Tweenies or something like inches or twinches?
Twinches. We'll go with twinches.
Yeah. Thought, that would be fun to do that. And then I first of all started looking at family photos, and I thought, oh God, this is dull. So then I then went to film. And so all these female divas came to mind. So I then started doing the stitching, which took forever. And I was only, you could just do 1, 2, 4, whatever. And I started up and ended up doing 16. I've got it on the wall here. I ended up doing 16. I couldn't stop, which is ridiculous, because I thought, oh, I've got to have Lizzie Taylor in it. I've got to have, you know, Dinah Dawes or, yeah. So that's what happened.
And that's the thing, like the portraits, that it's almost like when you see them on Instagram, I think you've done one where you've got like a coin as a size reference or something. But there's such like great little portraits in the first place. And then you go, oh, hang on a minute. Then they're two inches wide. And then you go, hang on a minute. And then they're sort of put onto a slide, and then you embroidered the details of the slide onto the fabric as well. At first, I wasn't sure whether it was an actual slide or whether the whole thing was a textile construct. But I think have you covered the slide?
What I did was I printed out onto white fabric the slide, and then I stitched it and then cut it out so that I could then cover the actual slide. Does that make sense?
So
the Kodachrome transparency text was first of all printed, and then I stitched over it
16 times as well. 16 Kodachromes. I mean,
and I did more actually, because some people and some friends said, oh, I love one of, you know, Marilyn Monroe. So I did extra after that. Yeah.
It's such a sort of nostalgia thing, because when I saw them, I suddenly remembered that my dad's probably still got boxes of those up in the loft. And, you know, an evening spent with that kind of like click whir sound as someone takes you through the slides of their photos, which just doesn't happen these days anymore, does it? We don't get that sort of that boredom when granddad goes, right, we went to Skegness, and you're like, right, I'm
asleep. Oh dear. Yes. Yeah.
But absolutely lovely.
I acquired Steve from school, so they must have done art history, because the school where I was working was an old grammar school at one point, and I found old slides of history of art really old things, and I took some of them, but was masses of them. I mean, they must have been bored. We're just the kids looking at Titty Ann on the on the screen.
It was the best they could do. Then I imagine someone one day someone invented an overhead projector and everybody lost their minds all of a sudden, you know. It's just
yes. Unfortunately, I just started teaching, and I remember there was a staff meeting to introduce video into the classroom.
Wow.
And they reeled in this gigantic telly with doors on it, and then they showed you how to switch it on, plug your VHS thing into cassette in and whirl it forward and back. I mean, that just shows you how old I was.
No, but I can... Now that you say it, it was always TVs always had to have doors on them as well, didn't they? And there was always like a key for the door, like it was some magical secret. Was being an art teacher something that you always had in mind? That was like,
yeah. I mean, I went to Loughborough Art College, and then you could, I mean, some went on to do went to the Royal Academy and places, but to be quite honest, I'd had my fill of the art college by then, and I did fancy being a teacher, and I enjoyed teaching, and I thought that's one way of continuing to be connected to art. Doing fine art doesn't really give you that many options, really.
I wonder whether you just had any real pearls of wisdom that you would always, like, even over all of the years, you'd still be like, this is something I'm going to teach the kids.
I just think it's the enthusiasm for it. And I think I always said about the importance of drawing, really, I suppose. Mm. That was always something that I felt was really important. You always found alternatives because... I'm sure other teachers will tell you that, I don't know if it's changed, it's probably not even as close as it was when I left in 2016. But kids would have options. I mean, your kids will have options when they get to year 9, going into year 10 and 11. And I know the system's changed a bit since I was there, but depending on their academic ability, they were put into different option blocks, and then they had a choice to make.
Mm.
And the less academically able would have option that would presumably suit their academic ability, and art was always in there, and PE.
Right.
And if a kid, or what else was there, health, childcare, that sort of thing. And if a lad didn't like football or sport,
yeah,
what was open to them? Oh, go and do art, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd come in very cheerful and say, you know, I'm crap at it. You know? So, well, I'm hoping that I can help somehow, you know, to get you somewhere with it. So I used to do a lot of things, like 3D stuff they used, like. I mean, I always found it really weird that as soon as you said to kids, we're going to do some clay work, the first thing they would say is, can we take it home? You know, they didn't say that with their paintings or drawings.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, they wanted to make something that would be useful.
An ashtray.
bless them. But yeah, you try and give them something that they'd enjoy doing, and therefore you'd get something out of them. What I was aware of was the kids were there in front of you, and it wasn't their first choice, really, of what they wanted to do for a GCSE.
Mm.
But, you know, you try and make it as, yeah, as good as
possible. Try and
find
the thing that sort of lights up for them, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever medium that is.
Which is really hard for some kids because they really don't want to be at school or something, really. Yeah.
So my daughters read a lot of kids' books, and I really enjoy going to the library and finding them. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting for me to look at the kind of illustrations that happen these days. Yeah. Like, I was fascinated to find out actually that there's children's book illustration degrees that you can do now. And it seems as though it's almost like bets are off. You know, there's people, I don't know how familiar you are with kids' books, so bear with me for a sec, but people like Lauren Child, who did the Charlie and Lola series, there's a lot of applique, but there's also just, the kids kind of look human, but it doesn't matter so much. The need for the anatomical precision is not there anymore. And I was reading a book recently by a guy called David Taziman, and his characters, some of them are just scribbles. You know, he's got a scene of some people playing football in an urban setting, and the trees are just like wax crayon scribbles. And then there's up on the bridge, there's a truck, and it's literally just like a couple of blobs of a truck. And that's cool. And that's fine. And it just got me thinking, and I try and pay attention with my girls and not just talk about the story, but we talk about the stuff, you know, the images we're looking at. And isn't it clever that he's made that person lying on a sun lounger like that? But it feels to me like that drawing thing you say is really important, because it's like, it's the first connection that somebody has. That's the most primitive mark making and the most terrifying. I would imagine a lot of people are just like, I can't draw, but it's more just like, you've not got comfortable with what your type of drawing is. Does that ring true?
Mm, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Lauren Charles, because I use that as a contextual reference with the kids.
Okay.
And they do based on their work, because it's quite, I mean, it's crazy and it's lovely. And as regards children's illustration, it's brilliant. I mean, one of my daughters did graphic design, and I went along to the college, and it was all wonderful courses there. One of them was applied arts. And I thought, God, if that had been around when I was at uni, I would have definitely taken that one, because you did a bit of all sorts. And that I think that's what appealed to the teaching, is because you do a bit of all sorts, really. Don't get too bored with something.
Yeah, I saw as well. I think there's degrees in like contemporary curation. I was like, hang on a minute. There's like a degree for this thing I've been bumbling over for the past 15 years or whatever. It sounded good.
I think my experience is that curating is a really difficult thing to do. I mean, hats off to a really good curator. You go to some exhibitions and you think, God, this has been put together really well, you know, compared to some amateur ones where you just see people sticking things up anywhere. So,
yeah. I don't know what the answer is. I think I've been quite lucky in that I sort of know what I like, and what I like has become more sophisticated maybe over time. But I've also not been too afraid of just saying I like something that's a bit weird, or, you know what I mean? I think sometimes that's the secret, isn't it? Is not to get too bound up by like the way things should be done and things should be arranged in this order and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you about mind maps, because apparently you use them quite a lot and I think they're ace.
This sounds like I'm really teacherish, but I'm not. No. Used to get kids doing mind maps, because you'd get like starting points on exam papers and things, and say, well, let's start off with a mind map. I mean, the girls always used to try and make them really pretty, and the lads would just stick words down, which is fine. The real beauty of them is, if something goes, I was going to say tits up.
It's fine. Tits up is good. It's a grown-up podcast.
You can go back to your mind map and see some other ideas and get some more ideas. I mean, I still use it because, again, that idea of when you've lost your mojo and you're going through a dull patch, you can go back to these things and it will spur you on to do something else. Oh, I remember I could have done that and I'll try it now. So it's really good for getting the brain working.
I used to run a community event, this is like a decade ago, and I remember once it was a lantern festival. So it was a one-off event kind of every year, but there were loads of pieces of the puzzle. And I rather smugly used a mind map for planning that. But I think they're brilliant because you dump everything out, don't you? You just empty your brain of it all. And in a way, once everything's out of the way, then you can sort of start to see it. And you've got the mind mapping, and then you also do a lot of sketchbooking. How do you spend much time referring back to yourself?
Yeah, I suppose I do. And when you say sketchbooks, I mean, I have what I would class as notebooks with little doodles in that look really, really bad. And sometimes I look back at them, I can't even make editors of them myself. So I'll have that, and I'll also have what you would class as more of a traditional visual sketchbook. But that's often filled with things I've done on bits of paper and then stuck them into the book, so they become more of a collage journal type thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I try to do, which I've done for years now, if I go on a trip, I take a journal sketchbook and do a sort of diary with images and things. I mean, my kids, when we used to come back from, and I still refer to them, come back from a holiday or traveling somewhere, I can look back and they like them more than the photos because there's things that have happened, death things that have happened on the way, and I've written about it and done a drawing or sketch to it. So you get more than you would do with a bunch of photos taken on holiday.
And do you find that those sorts of things might then trigger an idea or another piece of work or another direction?
Yeah. I mean, I feel them. I've got postcards in there with images from other artists and things, and I think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll just stick that on and I'll remember, and then I might go back to that and sort of adapt their idea.
Yeah, it's like you're juggling and then someone, instead of juggling a ball, someone throws you a grapefruit and you're like, oh, it's grapefruit. I'll kind of juggle that, maybe play with it a while, throw it back.
Yeah.
Like that.
My brain seems to be overloaded with this stuff a lot of the time. I mean, I've been known to wake up and need to go and write something down. So, yeah, it's blocking.
Works for... Is it Ronnie Wood who said that he wrote down, like, the riff? I'm going to get all these facts wrong, but it was like he wrote down the riff for Satisfaction and went to sleep and woke up in the morning and he'd got this tune and he got no memory of making it whatsoever, but that's how it worked.
I can believe that. Yeah. I can believe that, yeah.
It sounds reasonable.
Well, that's a good story.
Because one of the observations I've made from looking at your work, I think, is that there are some ongoing themes, but then periodically you just have a really experimental bit, or it's almost like you're sort of bouncing around against these edges and you push at an edge and you try a technique, whether it's cyanotype or, you know, using a bit of mixed media or, like you say, a bit of sea pottery, and then you come back in into the middle a little bit, but before you know it, you're sort of veering back off and bouncing against another wall.
Yeah, I would say that is very typical of me at the moment, and because stitching is so slow, I've got other things on my mind. I've got a jade plate here. So I made one myself a few years ago, and it was rubbish. I wouldn't recommend you doing that. So I bought this one, and I've done a couple of things on it. But it's really addictive, but it's in the back of my mind if I want to do more of that. So it's just...
Did you say a jelly plate?
A new toy. A jelly plate, yeah. Do you know a jelly plate?
Is that a plate made of jelly? I don't imagine it is.
Yeah, it's a gelatine. This gelatine plate is great for making background collage papers and stuff. And people transfer images onto cloth on it as well.
Right.
I'm surprised you haven't heard of jelly plates. If you Google it, go on YouTube, you find hundreds and thousands of people doing this stuff. And it's a really nice way of printing without having a printing press. You see the same things over and over again, but I've got some ideas of what I want to do with it regarding my textile work, because I think it would be a nice way of starting a background off and then stitching over the top of it. Layers is something that I'm kind of keen on doing, and you can see that in a lot of my work. I layer up different fabrics and things. So,
are you the sort of person that has one idea that has to be seen through to completion, or are you juggling like 7 or 8 concepts and you dip in and out of them as you feel like it?
I like to think that I have several things on the go, but I get started and I think, oh, I'll just finish this bit. So I tend to, once I've got started, I really see it through. Unless it's going completely A1, it's just going wrong, and then I think I'll leave that and I'll, there was one year, I think it was Containers or something, but the Embroidery Girls Challenge thing did. I'm not very good with 3D at all, and I decided to embroider some magpies on a bag. And I must have chucked it around this room so many times with frustration. And I just handed it in. And it got highly commended. And I thought, I really don't know how it did that, because it was so frustrating. I'm not very good at it. I've tried doing 3D flowers with wire and stuff. Oh, no, it's awful. I just, no. So I keep Tiddly 2D.
Do you undo work or do you just bin it?
Stitch over it.
Uh-huh.
Cover it up, usually. I mean, if there's not too much, I might unpick. A lot of the time I either paint or put some clack some fabric over the top.
Mm.
Yeah. Because I don't tuck it completely because I can cut it up and use bits of it for something else, which I think a lot of people do that.
Mm.
You know, you like bits of it, but other bits haven't worked. And I've occasionally cut those up and use them elsewhere and it worked.
Mm.
Maybe they felt good.
Yeah.
So I don't tend to throw things away unless they're awful, really bad.
And do you know when a piece is done or do you still have pieces where you're just like,
Yeah. Some definitely you're tired and you just, that's it, finished. Others, could still do something from that. It's quite tricky sometimes. So it's, I can't tell you yes, no, or no. It's just what you feel from stitching.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.